Welcome back to another episode of More Than Running with Dana. I'm your host, Dana Giordano, and this is a Citius Mag podcast. We may have forgotten in the midst of marathon season between the Boston Marathon and the London Marathon that it is, in fact, track season. And what better way to kick off track season than an interview with the 2021 track steeplechase Olympian Val Konstein. Val Konstein shares her journey of competing as an unsponsored athlete the past few years and will be announcing her new sponsorship on this episode. Val's personality, commitment, and drive to her running, all while keeping perspective, is incredibly refreshing. After suffering some injuries last year, coming off an incredible 2021 season, Val has had quite the journey in working herself to signing a running contract. I loved this conversation, really getting into the head of who Val is, what keeps her going, and how she is a realist about all things when it comes to the economics of running and training. I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and congratulations to Val and your new sponsorship. Enjoy. Welcome back to More Than Running. I am here with, would you like Val or Valerie? That's the first question of the day.
Thank you. I usually go by Val.
Val Konstein, coming to us from Boulder, Colorado, 2021 Tokyo Olympian in the steeplechase. Val, how are things going?
Oh, thanks for asking. Things have been going really well. Boulder in the springtime is absolutely beautiful, and the running's great. I'm just feeling really good and really healthy.
As you are looking forward to this upcoming season, you're coming off an extremely strong indoor season where you're a steeplechaser. So when you're thinking about what does a standard year look like, how did you think about designing this year after missing Team USA last year?
Yeah, missing last year was really difficult, but I was dealing with a lot of injuries. So last year at around April 17th, I actually got a stress reaction in my foot. I tore my plantar, and then I actually hurt my calcaneus. So it was a super long list of injuries. And then about 2 weeks before US Champs, I contracted COVID-19. And so then actually it was 10 days before the race. So last year was a big mess, and I didn't run very much, and I didn't train very much. And so then after last year ended, I really had to regroup and think about what I wanted to do, because I still didn't have a contract, and I switched agents, and I was like, okay, what's next for me? And I'd really love to try to compete for more teams and shoot for this coming team and maybe even Paris in the future. But I had to make a lot of changes to make it happen. And the biggest thing that I did was just letting go of any expectation that I had and just have fun. And so this whole leading up to the indoors, I was just focusing on being myself and having good days and being okay with bad days. And it's all panned out really well. And indoor was impromptu, actually, because it was really expensive. I had to pay for Boston all by myself, and then a week later turn around and try to compete at the indoor champs. But it all worked out for the best, and it was an altitude race, and I was born in Vail. I went to college here in Boulder, so it was great, and I won, and it was awesome.
I love it. I think one thing that you become really known for is your confidence, and I know things haven't always been that way for you. So let's rewind all the way back to 2021, the year that you made the Olympic team. How did you even decide to continue running post-collegiately? Because that's a really big decision. Obviously, going to CU Boulder, you have a lot of mentors and people ahead of you who do continue their professional careers. But for you specifically, what was it about, I have to keep going in this sport after college?
I just knew that I wasn't done. I knew that college wasn't the best, and I knew there was more left in the tank. And I just wanted to compete at the Olympic trials. I didn't think that I would be a professional runner ever. I never thought I'd make a team, but I knew that I could be better than what I was in college. And so I just had to prove to myself that I could do it. And that's what I've been continuously doing. I don't have anything to prove. I don't have anything to lose. I just want to see how fast I can run.
So in the 2021 Olympic trials, not only do you make the team, but you set a personal best in the steeplechase. You're on top of the world. You make it through the rounds at the Tokyo Olympics. You're basically standing at the peak. You have Team USA in your chest. What did you expect was going to happen next after the Olympics? And then what actually took place?
Great question. I assumed that if you make an Olympic team and you make an Olympic final, that you'd get a contract. But that obviously didn't happen. And I also thought that I had to do a lot of things different. And I thought I had to really amp up a lot of stuff, like running more, training harder, lifting more, dialing in everything. But it seemed like the harder that I tried to be the best, the worse I ended up getting. And I dug myself into a hole. Yeah. And so the biggest thing was letting go and just trusting the process and realizing that I'm good enough, that I don't have to do anything special, that I've already have everything there, and I just have to be patient and let the races come.
So there's two parts of that I really want to dig into. The first part of thinking that you need to change a lot of things and do more. One, you roomed with Heather McLean, who was my roommate at the time, and she was your roommate in Tokyo. But one thing she felt was very disappointed for not medaling. And we had many conversations of, hey, if I told you were going to make an Olympic team years ago or last year, you wouldn't even have believed me. And now you're disappointed you didn't medal. And she was like, yeah, I don't know how to explain it, but that's how that place leaves you feeling, that if you didn't come away with a medal, that you didn't do the Olympics correctly. I don't know if that's a very similar sentiment to you, but mentioning that you tried to change a lot of things after, how did leaving the Olympics make you feel like you had to make these changes?
Yeah, I didn't have that type of pressure because I've never really been the best. The first time I ever won a national championship was this past winter. And I never even came close in college. The highest I ever placed in college was 5th in the steeplechase in a pretty weak year. So my expectations were super low and I was just happy to be there. But I think that once you go to the world stage, that's where you feel like you have to be all the time. And it's really tough to take a step back and be like, you know what, I can take a break, I can take my time. And I did it once and I just need to do the same stuff to try to make it happen again. But it's easy to get greedy and it's easy to get competitive with yourself, especially if you have a journal or a log and you look back at what you did last year and you say, oh my gosh, my tempo run was 20 seconds faster last year. What's wrong? What's going wrong? And that's where I was at. Because also the Olympics was in August and I had never raced that late in my entire life. And I really just needed to take some time off. Yeah.
So you finished the Olympics, you took your time off, well-deserved in August, and had the expectations that the sponsorship conversations would start. The challenges of unattached athletes, I think people don't fully understand. So if you would please talk about how you expected the year to go, and then what happened as far as contract conversations. Because I think that a lot of people would be really disappointed to hear that you get to represent Team USA and then you have a very challenging financial year, because obviously flying across the country, flying across the world to all these meets is expensive.
Yeah, definitely. I think that a lot of brands focus on college graduates, right? And they want to see national championship NCAA caliber runners wearing their kits. But as you get older, people care less and they think, oh, you peak when you're 22 years old and it's a lot harder to get better. But for a lot of people like me, who maybe didn't have the best experiences in college for one reason or another. We just need a couple more years after graduation to mature and get ready. But it does become significantly harder. And a lot of brands thought I was a flash in the pan. Oh, she ran really well at the trials and she just so happened to make the final at the Olympics, but we need to see one more really good year before we invest a bunch of money and time putting her in a kit and giving her a chance. And unfortunately, getting injured really didn't help. And the agent that I had first, he was a really good road agent, but I don't know if he was necessarily the best choice for a competitive track athlete. And so I worked with him for a full year. We had no contracts, we had no gear, nothing. And there was some mistakes that unfortunately happened. And then I was like, okay, I have to do something different because if I actually want to start competing at the world stage, if I want to make more teams, if I want to go to Diamond League races, I need to have some support. Because I do work a full-time job. I still work, you know, 40 hours a week for a tech company, but it's like going to Doha. This trip is going to be incredibly expensive and stressful. And doing it all by yourself is not easy. Even for Boston, when I raced in the indoor, I got there the night before the race, raced the following day, and then got up early the next day and left. And from Denver to Boston, that's like a 5-hour flight. And so it was a lot of travel, and I was only there for like less than 2 days, basically. But if I had a contract, it would have been like, all right, I can stay an extra day. But I was tight on cash at the time, so I was like, oh, I gotta get in, get out, get the job done.
How do you manage that pressure? People who listen to this podcast know that I've been in a very similar situation. My first few years out of college, I was working and competing at the same time. But luckily, I worked for a shoe company, so a lot of work and that overlapped a little bit going to some events. How did you manage that stress of going in and needing to get the job done? There's definitely a different expectation on the race when you know, all right, if I run X time, I could be eligible for a contract versus just having this no expectation mindset that you were used to having in previous years.
I still have the no expectation mindset. And that's what I learned from last year. There was too much pressure last year and I couldn't deal with it. And it was too much on my mental state and it took a toll on my physical state. And so this past year, I was just like, oh, I just want to go run fast. And I didn't care about the time. I didn't care about anything else, but just trying to win the race. Be like, I want to do my best. I want to lay it all on the line. It was my first race on a 200-meter track and my first time to Boston. And so I was just happy to be there. And so I think that the best thing for me is to let go of that pressure and that control and just try to have fun and enjoy the experience.
I think that's really powerful of you to be able to do that. It's like something that is so resilient, and I don't think a lot of people have that skill and talent. Where do you think that power comes from within you?
I don't know if it's a power or if it's just a goldfish brain. I don't know. I try never to think too hard about stuff. Even now, like I couldn't even tell you how fast 15 flat 5K pace is on a track. Like I couldn't tell you the 400 splits. I have no idea. And I have no idea how fast I'm running most of the time. I just do whatever the coaches say and I get in, get the job done, go home, eat some food and go to sleep. And I love to run, but I have a lot of other stuff that I love to do too. And having those other things as not really a distraction, but as something else you can focus on, that's been incredibly helpful for me.
So this podcast is called More Than Running, and I did start it to talk to specifically female athletes about what they do off the track. So we have to take a quick detour and discuss all these things that keep you sane and happy and moving. So you live in Boulder, Colorado. You're from Vail. I take it being outside brings you joy. What are some things that you love to do when you're not running and competing and working?
Yeah, running, competing, and working definitely do take up a lot of my time, but I'm also a volunteer assistant track coach at the University of Colorado, and so I get to go to practice and make connections with young college athletes and other coaches, and that brings me a lot of joy. I also have two cats, and I really love them.
What are their names?
So they're named after the Guardians of the Galaxy characters.
Amazing.
Yes.
So cute.
Rocket and Yondu. They're brothers, and they're orange. They're very cute. And so I love them. And then I've been living with my boyfriend now since, I think, 2019. And he bought a house in Boulder, and it's really nice. And there's just a lot of great things going on. And it's hard to be upset. I look out my window, and I can see the Flatirons. And it's just, it's unbelievable. I'm just so lucky to be here, and I'm so lucky to have this life. And I just try to stay positive and just get the job done every day.
I think it's an incredible mindset to have of staying grounded, especially when you have that sense of gratitude as well. Boulder, Colorado is a really hard place to leave, and you're surrounded by so many elite athletes. What is your training group setup look like right now? I know there's a ton of athletes in the area, but are you doing most of your training solo? Steeplechase is a hard event to have training partners to begin with in the first place. Are you making your boyfriend pace you? What does the day-to-day training setup look like for you?
Yeah, great question. I go to practice at CU at 2 p.m. with the students on most of my workout days. And last year's college graduate, Michaela De Janeiro, who was the indoor mile champ and the runner-up in the 1500, she is now a professional athlete for Puma. And so we train together a lot, which is awesome. And then obviously Emily Covert, she's an amazing athlete, and she is super, super fit right now. I think she's going to redshirt this outdoor season because I think she has a couple years of eligibility between a redshirt and a COVID and all that stuff. And so do a lot of workouts with Emily Covert as well. And there's buffs who are fit in all aspects of running. And so there's almost always a group to jump in with and get some hard efforts done. But it is tough. Every time I steeplechase, I pretty much do it by myself. But there's a lot more to running than just jumping over stuff. And so I'd say probably for 90% of my training, I have another person to run with, whether that's easy days, just finding friends. Like you said, there's so many good runners here. And then on workout days, I almost always have a group to latch on to.
2 p.m. workouts. I don't know if I could ever go back to that, staying in the collegiate mode. But you mentioned you have a full-time job working in tech. Is that what, describe a typical day in the life of Val.
Okay. I guess it depends. If I have a day where I have to do two runs, then sometimes my days can start pretty early. So I would get up early, get in a little jog, and then try to start working. Usually around like 7 or 8 in the morning, try to get some work in, and then work pretty much up until 2, go into practice, run for an hour at practice, and then weightlift, and then come home, finish up some work stuff, make some dinner, maybe work a little bit more after dinner, read my book, and go to bed and get started with that routine again the next day, basically.
So keeping yourself extremely free time, there's a lot of it, it sounds like. You don't have a lot going on at all. But I've heard some news of yours that your life may be changing quite soon. So I think now would be the best time to, we've buried the lead 20 minutes into this conversation of Val. You've had such an incredible winter. You won your first indoor title. Some incredible 3K performances have stamped yourself as a contender to be a perennial member of Team USA in the steeplechase, the deepest women's steeplechase group of U.S. history. The sport has been progressing so far. And recently, you have signed a contract
with Nike. And I have the kit here. We can open it on the show.
Oh my gosh, amazing. Let's see. Green.
Okay. Green. And it just came in this morning, actually.
This is the inside scoop. This is what a kit looks like.
So very cute, obviously. Nell Rojas was wearing it at the marathon, so I'd expected it would look like this. And then the back is really cute. It's this really thin mesh in the back. And then there's a few other options, but this one's cool because it reminds me of the kit from Tokyo. So
how does it make you feel holding that kit up and just knowing that it's yours?
It's really amazing because I'm 27 years old. I've made an Olympic team. I've made an Olympic final. I'm a indoor national champion. I have all these accolades and I finally have a contract. And it's really cool because it's just confirmation that I'm not an imposter. I belong here. I deserve this kit. And now I finally have it. And I am so happy that it's Nike. Really, genuinely so happy because I love Nike product. I really do. One of my close friends from college actually works at Nike. And it makes so much sense. I don't have to change anything. And it fits into all other aspects of my life so seamlessly. I don't have to worry about, oh no, which shoe am I going to train in? Oh geez, I hope the spikes are okay. It's like I was going to the Roadrunner Roost, the shoe store, and buying this stuff with my own money anyways. And now I just get to order it with the Nike credit. And so it's honestly so perfect. And I just have to continue to count my blessings, right? And just be like, wow, this is an amazing opportunity. This doesn't change anything except maybe give me a little bit more credibility. And I just get to keep living this amazing life, but with Nike backing me, which is pretty impressive.
Why do you think it gives you more credibility? I feel like you're the type of person that if you walk up to a line without a kit, you feel pretty badass. You do wear the boldest shades out there. You're willing to show off your confidence when you come to the start line. What difference does actually being in a Nike kit coming to your next start line? What does that mean to you from a confidence perspective?
It's always, of course, I always try to tell myself like, oh, there's nothing more badass than being an unsponsored athlete and absolutely like killing it.
Beating people.
Yeah. And beating people who don't have to work a full-time job, who get paid a ton of money by some shoe company, who were collegiate NCAA multiple time national champions. And for me to step in just some casual weekend warrior and beat them, yeah, that's awesome. But also, it's toe the line at the indoor national champion, and I'm looking at everyone who has a top-seeded time, and almost everyone in the race is in a legit kit, and I'm just standing there in a 10-year-old CU jersey with old spikes.
and you're kind of, for everyone else, it's kind of, wait, what? The one Olympian in the field doesn't have a jersey? It doesn't make sense. That's how I viewed it. I was like, this doesn't make sense. That was your experience.
And it really didn't make any sense. And a lot of people think, and I had a lot of people ask me, oh, Val, do you not want a contract? It's like, what? Of course I want a contract. Of course I want to get paid to run. Of course I don't want to have to go buy all my own gear and have to like ration my money that I get from my job to finance this hobby. Of course I want a contract. But it's really tough. And if you don't get one immediately out of college, it becomes exponentially more difficult to get one. And, you know, working with the right agency, having people give you good advice early on, it all makes a huge difference. And I think that obviously everything happens for a reason, but I am so happy to have a kit, really, genuinely. And it's what I've wanted ever since I've graduated from college. I've always wanted to be a pro athlete, always. And it doesn't change anything. Like you said, I'm still like an Olympian. I'm still an indoor national champ. But now like I have this super sweet hit. I don't know. It just feels special. And because even at the trials, I wore a Tracksmith kit because a lot of times these races have really strict rules about what you can and cannot wear. And so having a kit that's not affiliated with a team of some sort can be tricky because it's okay, is the logo the right size? Is it the right color?
I know, it's all these silly little things.
Yeah, and it's a lot that you have to think about. So having someone else be able to take care of all those details is nice, so you can just focus on competing. And plus, these kits look amazing. They're so cute, and green is totally my color, so.
Wait, so what sunglasses will go with it now?
Now that I'm a Nike athlete, I can't actually wear the sunglasses that I was wearing, but Nike did send me some sunglasses. So I have a pair here.
Oh, those are pretty fast.
These are speed shades for sure. But there's some cute Nike shades, and I'm probably going to try to see if I can
test them out.
Yeah, and get a few different pairs, see if I can find some that I like. Because I actually do to train in sunglasses because the sun's so bright here in Colorado. And
you almost have to.
Yeah. Yeah, at this point, it's like a part of my brand too, wearing big sunglasses. But
so talking about personal brand, you gave me the perfect transition. Social media is a huge part of the current professional athlete experience. I think we were looking a decade ago, that didn't matter so much, but especially in getting a contract. Was that something that was on top of your mind, being consistent on social media as you were looking to secure a contract? And does that come naturally to you?
That's a great question. No, social media does not come naturally to me. I think that I don't really care about how I look, but when you post on social media, you do, and you have to keep to your audience. And so you're trying to show them a version of yourself that you think that they're going to like the most. And that can be stressful.
It's so wrong.
Totally. And some people are able to figure it out, and they're able to put really genuine stuff out there, and they don't have to try that hard. Or maybe they do, but they make it look effortless. And that's awesome. But yeah, both of the agents that I've had in the last year both advised me, like, you need to step up your social media game. Like, you need to post more. You need to do all this stuff. And yeah, I guess it can be fun sometimes, like the announcement posts, and like maybe taking some pictures in my new kit is going to be super fun. And obviously race pictures are fun, and race recaps and announcements again.
It's hard in the off season. You're like, what do I have to talk about?
And it's interesting because then there could be this odd thing where you're really excited. Maybe like your friend gets married and you're really happy, and you post some pictures about her wedding and you're so excited, and you get like half the likes that you would if you posted.
Totally. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, I have to post some stupid running photo. Okay, let me put on a running outfit and I'll stand in front of the mountains and take a picture. And it takes zero effort and I don't care about it at all. And it gets all this attention. And then the thing that I actually care about gets no interaction. And so then it can be a little bit disappointing. It's part of the game. It's totally part of the game. If I had 50,000 followers on Instagram, I guarantee you I would have had a contract a lot sooner. But because I only have 8,000 brands, because now professional athletes are an extension of a marketing team, right? You give them like a marketing budget, basically, and then they're a freelance marketer and they're gaining attention in a creative way with very little input from the brand. And I think that's really smart from the brand's perspective. But it sucks because then you could be one of the best runners in the country, but nobody cares because you don't take pictures of your butt on Instagram. So
for sure. It's definitely something where there are so many more opportunities that come because of social media, but it's really incongruent with the athlete experience. It doesn't come naturally to be so self-promotional when you're pushing yourself to new limits and places. And I think it's especially hard when people almost pick favorites in races off of social media followings sometimes, because you're only getting what that experience is externally. You have no idea what's happening to that individual. So it's been really fascinating as someone, you know, was a former athlete, the former professional who's competed at USA's, competed in the Olympic trials, for me to be like, it's interesting knowing some people and then knowing what's going on behind the scenes. But to understand, like, from a brand perspective, it is so important to be consistent, or else how are you supposed to promote the shoes that get everyone paid in the first place?
Yeah, it's a real conundrum, but I don't know. I try to maintain that goldfish brain into other aspects, like this whole social media debacle, and be like, oh, like, I'll post something, turn off my phone, not check it, be like, oh, whatever. It's just, it's there. It's either going to do or it's not. And it doesn't matter because you know what? I've got 40 emails in my inbox at work and I got to work on the product development and contact the developers. And I have all this other stuff going on that it is a privilege to be like, okay, still, even at this point, most of my income is coming from my full-time job that doesn't require me to post anything on social media or be on Instagram. So in that regard, I'm very lucky.
So will you be moving away from your full-time job or will you be doing a little overlap for a little while? What does this next stage look like for you?
I could not survive without my full-time job still, which I think is something that obviously we can't talk specific numbers or anything, but I think a lot of people have a misconception that when an athlete signs a contract that, you know, they're just like making tons of money and it's great. But so frequently people sign contracts with a lot of potential. But if I run really fast this year, yeah, I could make a lot of money. But if I don't, then I won't. And having that full-time job is great because it's, I don't have to change anything. I've been this successful working this job and I don't really see the point in quitting, especially when things are just starting to get good.
It's additional support though, for all the other aspects of it,
yes,
travel, competition, therapy.
I've got Kaiser insurance through my full-time job that I only pay 50 bucks a month for. I've got dental through my full-time job. I've got a 401k through my full-time job.
Yeah, unfortunately, those are not offered in the 1099 independent contractor contracts, unfortunately.
And the way the taxes work too, like with my W-2, I pay taxes out of every paycheck. But with the 1099, you pay taxes once a year in a lump sum at the end. And so it's something to think about, like, all right, just because I have this massive amount of money in my checking account right now from this contract, I have to be prepared to chop 30% off of this and pay it to the feds in a year. And at least with the W-2, like I'm almost always guaranteed a tax return, right? And I already know how to budget for that W-2. I've had this job for almost three years now. And it's okay. I know exactly how much rent costs. I know exactly how much groceries and my travel budget costs. So this contract is just like extra savings money, essentially, to just set me up. And the full-time job is wonderful because, okay, best case scenario, I can be a professional runner for 6 more years, right? Best case scenario in the steeplechase. 6 years is not that much time.
And 6 years is a very random number. Why stop at 6?
Well, because think about it. Like when you're 32, 33, like it's a lot harder to be...
No, I totally understand. And then once you get to LA 2028, then you're like, okay, probably I'm not going to go to 32.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be realistic because a professional athletes cannot compete forever. It's impossible. Maybe if you're a golfer or like a pool player or something, but as a runner, you know, when you get into your mid 30s, it becomes a lot harder to be competitive on the track. And in your late 30s, it becomes even harder to be competitive on the track. And I have no intention in moving up to the marathon.
That's none.
No, zero.
You know what? Today is April 25th, 2023. Val Constein just said she has no intention of running to the marathon. I cannot wait for your marathon debut.
No, I don't want to do it because there's other things I want to do.
Like, oh, what are those?
I'd love to travel and actually be able to take a
vacation. See the places.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was in Tokyo for over 2 weeks and all I saw was the village and the stadium. And that was it. And I'm about to go to Doha, and I guarantee you, I'm probably only going to see like the hotel and the stadium because I leave the very next day. And there's so much of the world that, yeah, I've seen, but I've only seen maybe like this much because I was so focused on trying to run fast. And I don't know, there's a lot more to life than running. And I'm not saying that I'm not looking forward to the next period of time where I get to do this professionally. Obviously, I'm incredibly excited to be a professional athlete, but I'm also excited to get on with my life when it's time to get on with my life.
You are speaking my language specifically. There got to be a point where I was like, I can't sit in a hotel room one more day and wait for a night race. I'm done. This is too much waiting around.
Totally. And having this full-time job is great because I work in quality assurance at a tech company. And the more years that I can get of experience working this, then the more opportunity I'm going to have in my life to get other jobs that are really meaningful and interesting and maybe high paying and maybe in different areas. And I think that the professional experience that I'm gaining in the workforce right now is so irreplaceable. And so I don't really see the point of quitting this full-time job when it's only going to be an upside later on.
One thing I like to do is talk about goals. So I'm going to ask you to name three goals. One goal will be a goal on the track. One will be a goal off the track. And then something fun you hope to do this year.
Goal on the track. I would like to make the world team this year. That's a big goal that I have on the track. I think it's possible. I know it's going to be hard. Like you said, this is the deepest steeplechase women's category we've ever seen, and I'm excited to be a part of it. Off the track, big goal. I think I've been trying to learn French. I've downloaded Duolingo and I have the free version. And so I've been trying to learn French and I've been doing it pretty well for a year. And so my goal is to just stay after that and to just keep trying to learn French and see how it goes. Stay motivated because it's tough.
Is that related to potentially some big event in France next year?
Yeah. So that's mainly why. But also, like, I would love to also go to some Diamond League races in Europe. I think that would be really fun. And I also feel silly. Everyone else in the world basically speaks at least two languages. And
yeah, we're the worst.
Yeah, we're the worst. And so I want to try to at least learn one. And I think once I learn French, Spanish will be pretty easy. And so it'd be really cool to try, because it's never too late to learn something new. And so I want to try. And what was the third question? I'm sorry.
Something fun you want to do this year, and maybe it's extending one of these European meets a couple of days so you can explore.
Yeah, so that's actually exactly what I want to do. So I'm a very big Formula One race car driving.
Monaco.
Exactly. And so when I hope to get accepted at the Monaco Diamond League meet after US champs, and I would love to then extend that Monaco trip for maybe 2 days to just...
Is it that close?
Monaco is a very small country. It's
like, oh, no, I know the space, but like the timing, like the F1 race.
There's no chance that they would overlap it.
That would be the coolest track experience ever. We had Stade de Louis, and then the next day it was the Formula One race.
It would be a total nightmare because the whole city just
there'd
gets
be nowhere to stay.
So expensive. Yeah, and overrun, and it would be a total nightmare. But it would be really cool to go to the car museums, and because there aren't actually any Formula One races happening that week. And so the city is going to be pretty empty. It is a city, but it's not going to be crazy with people, I don't think. And so we could probably find like a cool Airbnb. Like there's these Airbnbs in Monaco where you can stay on a yacht.
Oh, wow, see your future.
Yeah. And so it'd be cool to stay at a cool Airbnb and then maybe go to a car museum and then just see the racetrack, because the Formula One racetrack is in the city, right? It's a street circuit. And so it'd be fun to walk the circuit, at least most of it, because I don't think you can walk through the tunnel, but it'd be really cool to just see it because it's a cool race and I love Formula One.
I know. Drive to Survive. We're going to bring it to track and field. It's going to happen. Women's steeplechase edition.
To survive.
Just call it survive. Survival mode.
Yeah. Facts.
Don't fall. So as we think about the women's steeplechase field in the U.S. in particular, I know you seem like an athlete that's like really focused on yourself and your individual accomplishments. It'll likely take a personal best to make the team this year. Is that, how do you approach knowing that there's so many more players in the game and possibly Emma Coburn has, fellow buff, dominated the event for a decade? Is this the year that there could be a new steeplechase champion? Is that your goal, or is it make the team, then figure out after? Like, how high are we setting the sights this year?
I think I have to get a few races in because I haven't steepled since last year, and a good indoor season doesn't always 100% translate to a good outdoor season. So I just have to see where I'm at. So Doha, it'll be a great opportunity, and then hopefully race one more time and then see how it goes. A steeplechase is an insane event, right?
When
I made the Olympic team, Leah Fallon fell. A bunch of people had already had the qualifying time, and I just happened to have the best day on that day. And then even last year,
it was an incredible race. Like, thinking back on that, like, it's just, that was insane.
It was insane, right? A lot of stuff happened. And then last year, Courtney Frericks wasn't feeling very good, and Courtney Wayman almost caught Emma at the end. And so I think that a lot of stuff can happen, and I wouldn't want to say, oh, I'm going to go out there and win the whole thing, because nobody's raced yet. Courtney Frericks,
it's too early.
She just had surgery. And Courtney Wayman is coming off of an indoor season, and Emma's, you know, going to try to race soon probably. And so I think that it's just too early to say, but obviously I want to run fast. I want to run as fast as I can. I want to see how good I can get. And if I don't run my fastest time, like, that I'm physically possible until later in the season, so be it. Making the world team would be amazing, but from what we've learned from so many other amazing athletes is not making the world team is fine. There's plenty of other amazing races that you can do, and there's lots of opportunities to run fast. So obviously I want to try to make the world team because it's a huge honor, but if it doesn't happen, there's other fish to fry.
What advice would you give to someone who is in a very similar position to you post-collegiately? You exit college and you're still hungry and you know there's more for you. What advice would you give to that person that knows they want more? How would they design their life to continue on this path to hopefully end up where you are today, signing a contract at 27?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing that I would tell a college grad who does not have contract prospects, number one thing, get yourself a full-time job. Because going into debt, being financially insecure is not going to help you become a good runner. Because if you can't travel to race, if you can't afford to buy yourself shoes and quality nutritious foods, then you've set yourself behind from the gun. So get yourself a full-time job and try to find something remote or a remote hybrid thing. Part-time jobs are okay, but when you're 26, you need healthcare, right? Unless you can get a contract by the time you're 26, then you're going to have to start paying for your own, and that's super expensive. So I'd say get a full-time job at a company that respects athletics, that you could possibly do hybrid or work from home. Find yourself some training partners and some coaches that are known to be successful. If you actually have goals to be in U.S. championship finals and competing and winning, then you know what they say, you're the average of the five people you spend the most amount of time with, right? And so I try to spend a lot of time with my coaches, Mark and Heather and Jenny Simpson, Michaela DeGeneiro, Emily Covert, and I'm lucky to have access to these people. But yeah, I would tell young adults, just try to make good decisions. And obviously that's hard to do because when you're 22, 23.
It's almost impossible.
Of course, but the best thing you can do is get yourself a good job, so that you're at least financially available to compete.
I think it's a burden that people don't talk about enough, and it's being brought more into the conversation of how much stress that can put on your body and your mind when you're competing, and to have the support and know that you're also working towards something as well. Like, full-time jobs aren't the worst thing in the world. You know, you're stimulated every day, but it also makes you have the freedom to compete in the way that you want to.
Yep.
So, Val, my last question for you. Road to 10K on Instagram. Why should people, this is the call to action right now, why should people follow you and root for you this season?
I don't know.
It's less about Instagram and more about why should people root for you?
Okay, I guess people should root for me because I think that everyone loves a good dark horse or underdog. And there is nothing more underdog than literally pulling yourself up from your bootstraps for the last 3 years and doing everything from the skin of your teeth to then getting to a position of, okay, I am here and I'm here to stay. And so if you want to see a competitive athlete who is given an amazing opportunity and who's going to really take that opportunity and run with it, then I'm the person to watch.
She's your girl. She's your girl. I can't wait. Congratulations again on signing the contract with Nike and good luck in Doha coming up. We're so excited to root for you and cheer for you. And we just can't wait for the fireworks that's going to be the women's steeplechase this summer.
Thank you so much.
And that wraps another episode of More Than Running with Dana. If you liked this episode, share it with a friend. Leave a review and subscribe to the podcast. Everything helps to get us to grow and reach more people who are interested in women's running on and off the track. More Than Running is edited by Mike Zarzullo and is on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network, your home for all things track and field coverage this spring and summer and beyond, of course. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.